Good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you might be in the world. Welcome to the IBA Corporate M&A Committee podcast. Today, we will explore how innovation is transforming global deal-making. I'm Adina Shapiro, your host. After nearly two decades practicing M&A in big law, I'm fascinated, perplexed, and frankly, somewhat daunted by the rapid changing that we're seeing and how it affects our field. Today, we have the distinct pleasure of speaking with a key voice in the AI and M&A world, Noah Weisberg. Noah is co-founder and CEO of Zuva, a company that uses AI to help businesses understand the details of their documents. Previously, he co-founded and served as CEO of Kira Systems for more than 10 years until its exit, helping grow the company to over 200 employees and having 18 of the top 25 M&A law firms, as well as all of the big four as customers. Prior to Kira Systems, Noah was a corporate lawyer at Weil Gotshal in New York. Noah is an expert on contract analysis, legal technology, and artificial intelligence, has spoken at conferences including SXSW Interactive, ILTACON, and Legal Geek, and has been named Financial Times Intelligent Business Market Shaper and ILTA's Innovative Thought Leader of the Year. Noah holds a JD from NYU School of Law, an MA from Brown University, and a BA with honors from McGill. He is the co-author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller AI for Lawyers and of Robbie the Robot Learns to Read, the world's first children's book on machine learning. So, wow, that's a lot. Noah, great to have you here, and thank you so much for joining. Also joining is my colleague, Stephen Solorch, general counsel at OpTrust. And together, we serve as officers in the International Bar Association's Corporate M&A Committee. Stephen and I co-chaired a panel on legal tech in the annual conference back in 2022, which at the time was innovative, a bit obscure, and not at all an obvious topic at the tail end of a conference, and we were frankly worried that we would not be able to fill the room. We actually did have a full room, but since then, together with other officers and members in our committee at the IBA, we've been following this field in the legal tech landscape as it accelerated dramatically, especially following the emergence of generative AI like ChatGPT. AI is now moving forward in rapid leaps. Its use in the legal profession, even if not prevalent on all fronts, certainly raises a lot of questions and trepidations and is no longer esoteric and not anything we can afford to ignore. So, Stephen, also great to have you here and excited for you to keep a client perspective as we engage in this conversation. So, Noah, as M&A lawyers, we are always interested in trends. I now regularly see investments in legal tech, AI startups, and companies. And we've seen recently a wave of high-profile, big-ticket legal tech acquisitions just in 2025, such as Clio and VLEX, Wolters Kluwer acquiring Brightflag, Litera and Microsoft. Just recently, I saw the Harvey investment and valuation. So there's a lot going on. Legal tech is, of course, a broader category and has been for years involving matters such as blacklining, timekeeping, billing, law firm practice, etc. But we could probably say that you are involved in one of the earliest decent-sized legal AI M&A transactions. So from your perspective, how do you interpret these recent M&A moves strategically? Do they suggest AI is becoming a standalone investment class, or how would you look at this from buyer motivation as it evolves since the Kira early days?
I think there's a few things going on here. As you mentioned, there's always been a level of legal tech M&A, and there are some significant sized legal tech companies. You can think of Thomson Reuters and Lexis as largely legal tech companies, and they're not small. And they've always bought things. And Thomson Reuters, in fact, is really the product of a whole bunch of consolidation over a whole bunch of years. So I think there's always been a level of legal tech M&A. I think there is a lot of money in the space right now. The view is that lawyers and law firms are good business. And I think there's companies that are showing that they're good business. We were able to do that at Kiro for a bunch of years with just building customers and growing revenues. And I think there's a lot of companies now that have done so, both with selling things to law firms and selling things to corporates and corporate legal teams. And I think just as you see those spaces growing, and I think an increasing realization that lawyers can be a pretty nice market for tech companies, you're seeing more money flow into the space, and some of that money is going into M&A, some of that money is going into VC funding. And so I think it's pretty natural to see things. I think legal is kind of a hot space right now. I think people are really jazzed about the idea of, I think there was a Goldman Sachs prediction that 40% of lawyer work could be automated with AI, and they see the, you know, billions of dollars that's spent on legal work right now, and they're like, whoa, 40% of that could be done with AI. That's really appealing. I'm not as convinced that that's true. And I think that there are some really amazing things about selling to the legal market. And like, I had a good run doing so with Kira, and like, we kind of continue to do so with Suva. I think there are harder things with selling to the legal market as well. And I think that, especially to the extent you're selling to law firms, there's real kind of questions around ROI and how law firms get ROI when they bill hourly from efficiency technology. And I think that's still something that, you know, I don't know has changed dramatically in this era, but I think there's still a lot of funding there. But generally, like, there's people buying this software, and certainly like with Brightflag or the VLEX, like these are like real big substantial companies with real substantial revenues. And so you get M&A in those spaces naturally.
Yeah, it's interesting because as M&A lawyers, we're following the trends and we want to see what's happening, and yet it affects us. So it's like, you know, touching our home base.
People think you're good business. I don't know. Like, M&A is a great business, right? It's an amazing business. Think about, I don't know, like, you know, think about how many people are listening to this podcast who are like the very best student at their very good law school, or one of the few best students in their very good law school, right? Like, the reason probably a lot of you are in M&A is it's like a very lucrative practice area, right? Like, it's really nice. There's lots of like smart people around. There's lots of like good challenges, but also there's like significant budgets to pay for people to do stuff right. And I don't actually think the M&A space is facing like nearly as much attention as almost it deserves, as like truly a spectacular place to work.
Interesting. So let's broaden the lens a little bit beyond the deals themselves and the trends. And we can, of course, spend hours speaking on the legal advice aspects of how we support clients in their use of AI, and how they should be approaching AI in the context of their transactional diligence and contracting. But our focus today is a little bit different. And what we wanted to focus on was how we as lawyers use technology to better deliver the services to our clients, and how we can leverage AI and technology to provide services with better quality and efficiency. So, you know, how do you see AI as actually being used in M&A today from your perspective? And, you know, Stephen, also feel free to chime in where you see this coming in from your perspective as in-house counsel.
So I think AI and M&A, and let's just limit this to AI in M&A for law, because I think there are also AI tools that might be used by investment bankers to help them source deals, or to help them put together like pitch materials or maybe financials or anything like that, that people who do Q of E reports are using to help put together Q of E reports. I don't think we should talk about that stuff. I think we should talk about stuff that's interesting to M&A lawyers. And so for M&A lawyers, Central Spot AI has been used since probably, I'm going to say 2014, 2016, is around due diligence, right? In due diligence, this was something we were kind of pioneering with, or among the pioneers with Kira. And so the basic idea is just, to the extent you're looking through contracts and trying to find stuff in those contracts about change of control, consents or assignment or restrictive covenants or things like that. I think there's like a pretty strong record of a lot of firms using AI technology to help them do that work. And in general, I think you'd hear from people that they'll be able to review a contract in 50 or 70% less time using the technology, and that they'll do it with the same or even better accuracy. And I think that's like pretty well established. Adina, as you were mentioning in my intro, when we sold Kira in 2021, 18 of the top 25 global M&A league table law firms were using Kira to do that work, mostly around M&A. So I think the due diligence use case is kind of clearly established. And we should come back to that in a sec, because I think there's like an interesting, there's a lot of interesting kind of implications to that. It's sort of not as simple as you might first think. Then let's think about other areas where you could use AI to help. AI and other technology can also help you with kind of closing deals as well, like just keeping track of all the signature pages and all those kinds of things. That's not just AI, but like a lot of the mechanical stuff that's got to go on. AI can also be really helpful. And like we saw some use of Kira this way, though I think there's other technologies that does it too, in terms of just putting together like deal point study. So I think the ABA deal point studies were used sometimes using our technology, sometimes using other technology. But I think just figuring out like what's market on a given point is something that is super important to senior M&A lawyers who are negotiating deals. And AI technology can help put together what's market studies. Finally, you could theoretically use AI to like draft a merger agreement or negotiate a merger agreement. I think on the drafting side, I personally find the idea of using a kind of AI-generated, like purely AI-generated press like document sort of horrifying, and it's not something I would necessarily recommend. But I think the idea of using it to tweak a sort of precedent that you're comfortable with and having it sort of modify that precedent to sort of suit your situation in limited ways, and then reviewing those changes closely, is something that AI could definitely do now and be helpful with. And maybe even help you turn some changes and things like that as you get other drafts from the other side. So I'd say those are, to me, areas where I think about AI in M&A. Coming back to the diligence point, I think the interesting thing for a lot of people on here, especially like the law firm lawyers who probably bill hourly in a lot of cases, is like, how does this work for you if like you bill hourly and all of a sudden you're like, Noah's saying that there's technology that's widely used, that has been widely used for close to a decade, that can help you do that work in half the time. Like, how do the economics of that work out? Like, if you used to do diligence at $1,000 an hour and now, and it took you, say, an hour a contract to review a contract, and now you can review a contract in like half an hour. So that means it's like $500 a contract, and you used to review 100 contracts. So that means like it used to cost $100,000 for diligence, and now it costs $50,000. Like, how does that work in terms of the economics of running like a private practice M&A group? And I think the really exciting thing to me about AI in this space is using AI to do work that was previously uneconomic. So what I think about with diligence is Steve and I both used to practice at Wagashall together. We were a couple doors down the hall from each other. And back then, I think, Steve, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but for me, the deals I was seeing, a lot of like not the massive GE kind of carve out-y things, but like a standard PE deal, you're probably reviewing 100 to 300 documents for diligence on a standard PE deal, right? But the standard kind of deal that Wagashall worked on was probably like a few hundred million bucks. And a company that's worth a few hundred million dollars in most, but not all cases, is not going to have 100 contracts or 300 contracts. It's actually going to have like 5,000 or 10,000 contracts probably. And so we were just reviewing 100 contracts. Basically, we were reviewing the material contracts, but material just in terms of like valuable contracts, but we weren't ever getting to contracts that like maybe weren't high dollar value, but could say something weird. Like it's just not something we ever had the kind of client willingness to spend to actually review that type of stuff. And I think what the AI, and I can tell you having run Kira, where we were a small company and then got to be a big company, like some of our smaller dollar value contracts were actually kind of sketchy, right? Because we didn't have a lot of negotiating leverage in the early days. And only as kind of like we came along as a company where we started to get more policies around contracts, a lot of the contracts were systematically bigger than two as we got further along. And so there could have been really sketchy things in some of these early contracts. And in a standard diligence, you might not have even found them. And so the exciting thing about AI making it sort of cheaper to do individual pieces of legal work, cheaper in terms of effort, is that you can actually potentially spend more effort, but just by covering more area and sort of doing things that people didn't do before. One of the things at Zuva that I've gotten really focused on is sell side diligence and pre-screening. And just the fact that like in North America, in Europe and like UK and Australia, vendor due diligence is totally like market and normal to have happen. But in North America, it more or less doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is basically because of price, right? Like it's not like I don't know, Steve, you buy and sell stuff, but like it's not like there aren't kind of, if you're a seller, there's definitely like still bad things that could be lurking in your contracts. And it'd be really good if you knew those things ahead of going to market, right? So that like you don't get surprised by bidders, so that maybe you have time to remediate those things. And just no one does that in North America outside of like weird, again, carve-out-y sort of deals. And I think the reason for that is because of cost, right? Like it's $100,000 or $400,000 or $700,000 to get a big law firm to do that. And if it was a reasonable price, I actually think a lot of people will go for that. And so like one of the things that we've started doing with Zuva lately is just offering those kinds of sell side focused pre-screen reports, but for like 10 to 20% of what it would have cost otherwise. And we think that that's kind of like an interesting spot where you can leverage AI to provide something that people weren't even getting before. So I think as people out there think about AI, it doesn't just have to be like, it makes you more efficient. Like I think the clients definitely like efficiency, but efficiency doesn't have to mean doing the same things you were doing before. Like it really can mean doing things that the clients would get value out of, but that they would not have paid for at the sort of status quo non-AIE rates costs. Sorry, that was like a super long monologue.
And that's a fascinating use case. It's interesting to hear, like, the, you know, especially the sell side, you know, vendor diligence that, as you said, is not always prevalent, at least in deals that we see. And I want to delve into the billable structures, because I think as lawyers that interests us a lot. But Steve, maybe just you want to touch on some of the uses, if there are any other uses. No, you were a little more hesitant around the drafting areas. I've seen more tools emerge over the past year or so in terms of the generative drafting markups. But, you know, Steve, from your perspective, are there any other uses that you would highlight as in-house counsel?
Thanks, Adina. No, I mean, I would agree largely with what Noah just said. The AI is exciting because it allows us to look at more and do more than we might have historically for little incremental additional cost. So that's really valuable, whether it's more contracts, as Noah said, whether it's sell-side due diligence, that's fantastic. So agree entirely that that's a great opportunity. In terms of the drafting, I also agree with Noah. I think there's some really interesting products on the market, but I think we're not quite there yet. I'd be a little nervous to utilize and engage those, and I don't think that others that we work with, whether it's partners, whether it's advisors, are quite there. So I think there's lots of opportunities. What I've seen recently, which I think is quite interesting, is really an increased use or focus of legal technology, particularly by national or international law firms, of course, to use internal tools that they're developing to provide and dissect more information, sort of going back to Noah's comments on, you know, what's market or deal studies, law firms really doing their own to help us make better decisions or negotiate better outcomes. So, you know, using AI to track, you know, provisions across an individual client's transactions, for example, to have guidance on what we've agreed to or not agreed to in the past, or doing that on a broader basis, you know, anonymous basis, getting client permission, I hope, to input transactional data into, you know, a proprietary tool to really give us a sense of what's market on a particular point of negotiation, or, you know, a percentage of deals of a similar size within a particular time frame that had that provision, or using AI to track what other parties or certain seller profiles might have agreed to. So that type of insight has been incredibly valuable, and we've been seeing more and more law firms offering that as sort of a new offering to clients, leveraging AI.
Building your playbook as a client, or in a way.
I think one useful thing to think about with AI is that it's not perfect in general. So I think it's important to think about, when you're thinking about AI, like, where do you have some flexibility around perfection? Where can the AI be supplemented by humans and user interface to get to a really good result? Right. So I think about something like what's market. Like, it's a like, what's market is useful for negotiating purposes, right? Like, it's not. And so if you're a little bit off there, it probably doesn't matter, right? Like, one of the things I like about it for on buy-side due diligence, there's not a lot of flexibility in terms of being wrong. But what you can do is you can use the technology and you can supplement it with people, right? So at, like, Kira, we ran a whole bunch of studies, and like, customers would run studies. And what we would see over and over again was that whether or not that, however accurate the technology was, a person using the technology would do the same quality work or better. I think that was really important. One of the things that stands out to me about sell side diligence, especially in like a North American non-reliance context, is that like, it actually doesn't really need to be perfect, because if you've got an insured deal, a lot more of the liability is going to flow onto the buyer and the insurer. So if it's like, what you're really trying to do there is get ahead of bitter questions. So it's kind of like the what's market sort of situation, where you need to be kind of directionally right, but you don't need to be perfect. One of the things that makes me nervous around drafting is, like, I think if you're doing a draft merger agreement, like, that's probably a spot where I don't feel like being directionally right. Like, I feel like being right. And I worry that it could be hard if you were starting with a pure Gen AI draft to, like, I think it might be more work in some cases to check that and make sure you were happy with it, rather than just starting from a trusted precedent and then using the AI to kind of touch it up. But I think that it is important to kind of recognize that the AI is definitely not perfect. Neither are humans. But that if it's wrapped in the right interface or process or whatever, you can end up in a situation where you can be doing the same or better quality work. But there may be times when doing not perfect work may be okay too. But there are other situations where, like, that isn't there, and you just need to think about what you're getting out of the AI. And I think that's like not in the M&A space, but that's like what we see in the litigation context, where you're seeing like briefs get submitted to court, or even like worse, like judgments coming out with hallucinated cases. Like, those are spots where it needs to kind of be perfect, and you need to be a little bit more careful around using AI. Whereas like, there's other situations where it's like, maybe like searching for precedent cases or doing an early draft of something, where it can be totally fine to have a level of error.
Yeah, or and sort of creating a firm, again, maybe as Stephen, you were talking about the playbook for the client in terms of what you're agreeing to market, not market, or what the positions might be. But it can also be that firms, as they look at precedents, they're looking at, you know, what is used in what case and what types of clauses. And so it's probably, I would assume, for everything, this balance between the human trusted advisor portion and where we take the scalpel and say, this is where we need to be, and the broader sense of where, you know, there's a lot of busy work going around. And that's probably in every aspect of M&A, but agreeably, you know, the drafting components might have more attention to detail at this point. Is that how you would?
Yeah, like just with drafting specifically, I just have this very distinct memory of being a first year, and our client decided to was a GC and decided to save some time by creating some policies themselves. And so I had to, like, then as the first year on the project, I had to go and like check those policies against the firm form. And it was probably like 10 hours of work to sort of look at his policy, look at the firm form, and see if everything in the policy lined up with the firm form. On the other hand, if he had just said, like, create this policy, like, you know, corporate governance policy or like nominating committee charter or whatever it was, I could have just gone to the firm template, taken the firm template, subbed in the company's name, and everything would have been fine. And it probably would have taken an hour. So I think about that with, like, if you're going to start from a Gen AI based document for like a merger agreement or something like that, I think you'll have to put in a lot of work to make sure that it's something you're okay with. Whereas if you were to start from a trusted template, you don't have to put in that effort. But then I think the AI could be great with taking that template that you found and tweaking it to your specific circumstances in a way where, like, especially if the UI you're using allows you to like look at the red line changes that the system, like the AI made, that's a spot where it could totally save time to me. But like getting it to do the first draft, to me, I would rather start with some kind of trusted form. Like if I was at a law firm, I would start with the trusted law firm form, or I'd start with some deal that I had done, or I'd start with a deal that like someone I trusted did. If I was in Steve's shoes and I was doing this without a law firm, I would start from like a previous deal that I had done, or I would ask one of my trusted law firms in that jurisdiction to send me their template or something like that. I think you'd end up in a better place, like a more efficient place that's higher quality.
Sorry, Dean, I was going to ask, do you mind if I just pick up on that point and ask Noah a question from the client perspective? Back as you mentioned, you talked about early days of Kira and, you know, using the tools and supplementing that obviously with lawyers to get that accuracy up on a review. And, you know, I remember when you were, first developing the product and you came in to meet with many clients, including myself, the product might have been at sort of 90% accuracy. And the message was exactly as you said today, you know, you supplement that with human capital to get it to 100%, if that's what you're aiming for, something close to that. And as you're talking about the drafting tools and where the market is going, I mean, where do you feel those are in that sort of continuum? Is it sort of that 90% less? Can you supplement it? I know we just sort of got your perspective, but from mine as a client, one of the things we're really concerned about is, you know, with the proliferation of products on the market, probably in part because the M&A market around legal tech is so strong, you know, there are so many tools and so many products coming to market that there's that concern that we might be adopting something too soon or implementing something too soon. Everybody's excited about AI, but, you know, do you feel that some of this is maybe a little too soon? And, where do you think we're going? We want to obviously be, mindful of using legal technology today and, you know, benefiting from it, but also, you know, we got to think about the future and not being too conservative and missing today's opportunities as a result.
I think actually, like, I have a distinct memory right now showing you our software when I think it was like 70% accurate or something like that, like not even 90. And I think we were able to push the accuracy up. I think I remember the exact place that we had that conversation. Anyways, I think I'm not sure on the drafting tools. Like, I don't, because I'm not day-to-day practicing M&A, like, I just wouldn't be the best person to ask. But what I would suggest on trying to figure that out is a lot of law firms now have pretty built out innovation teams who tend to be pretty good at like testing those things and kind of finding stuff out. So if I were in-house and I were trying to find that out, I would probably reach out to a few of my law firms and just ask to speak to some of those innovation teams and just see if they had a view on where those tools are. My comment would be that you probably don't need the AI to be perfect in order to generate higher quality work product than a person can. It just, the AI needs to be wrapped in an interface that allows you to improve things. And so part of it is the AI itself, but part of it is the user interface that it's wrapped in. The second question you had, which is like, should we adopt this now versus later? And my guess is you can probably make a lot of gains by adopting some stuff now, even if it may not be the last piece of technology that you ever buy. Like, inevitably, it will not be the last piece of technology that you ever buy. And sometimes buying the wrong piece of technology, like, it can be really bad and it can take you off track. But a lot of the times, it can really accelerate you, even if something that you buy later might accelerate you more. I think about once upon a time, I was living in New York and I was about a 20-minute walk away from my gym. And I would like walk to the gym. Sometimes I'd like jog to the gym and take like 12 minutes or something. And I kept being like, I should buy a bike. And eventually, at some point, I bought the bike like a year later. And as soon as I got the bike, it took me like 6 minutes instead of 20 minutes to get over to the gym. And you know what? As a matter of fact, I ended up moving out of New York like 4 months after I bought the bike and like leaving the bike in the basement of my building, like whatever. But it's still like, it saved me such a huge amount of time over those 4 months that even though I only got sort of 4 months out of it, it still was like really, really, really dramatic in the time savings. And I suspect that like if you were to pick up, there are AI systems, if you were to pick tasks that you spend a lot of time on, and you sort of roughly tested the AI system, and we could talk about testing if we had more time, but I don't think we do today. But if you were to test the system out in a sort of realistic way, that I think you'd probably get something that could save you a lot of time. And, you know, so what? In 2 years, maybe the technology is way better. The one you chose isn't the winner. You go into something else. I still think you'll be able to save a lot of time right now. Like just thinking back to the Kira numbers, which were quite a while ago, like you would save like literally 50% of your time reviewing an individual contract. And like, it's pretty easy to spend 30, 45, 60 minutes reviewing an individual contract. So like, how many hours do you need to spend on the procurement process before that becomes like pretty good value for you?
Just touching on that before we probably have to wrap up because we're running out of time, but Stephen, maybe the when you're looking at incentives to you in shifting in outside incentives that might be shifting in terms of outside counsel selection, is there anything that you're taking into account with the use of these tools? Maybe, you know, shifting from a billable hour model. I don't think we're moving away from the billable hour model so quickly, but just generally, is there something that you're looking at?
Yeah, I would say, Dina, and be interested for Noah's perspective as well. I mean, you know, I think clients' expectations are really beginning to shift. You know, while we've all been aware of tools like Kira for years, I think clients now really are regularly asking their external partners if they intend to use such systems on a transaction, and if not, why not? So when you say expectations, I think we expect our external law firms now to be up to speed on the legal technology market. And, you know, be testing and adopting AI as appropriate, recommending opportunities for us to use it. As Noah said, obviously, it's got to be a large enough firm, but a firm that has a legal innovation or technology officer is something that is appealing to us. It shows the firm is progressive. And, you know, I think what's really important there is, you know, all of us internally, whether it's from our deal teams, our COs or our board, we're all under pressure to be more efficient, to do more, to manage costs effectively. So we, you know, we look at our law firms as really partners with us in doing that. So of course, as you know, traditional factors like industry expertise, talent, service, those things all remain critical when selecting a law firm for a matter. I think law firms should expect that clients are going to be increasingly asking about the use of AI on their deals. Maybe some of the other benefits I talked about earlier, some of those bespoke internal tools that law firms are creating that become part of the overall value proposition when working with a law firm. And to your point on your question about, billable rates, et cetera, I mean, that's obviously going to be something that is very sensitive for law firms, as AI has the potential to disrupt this. And I would say that, both from my perspective and, in talking with peer GCs and CLOs, we're all well aware of that. And, as traditional billing methods or law firm profitability are potentially impacted by AI, I mean, we do consider those law firms to be partners with us. So we want to figure out how we can all take advantage of the opportunities legal technology presents to be more efficient, but do want our law firms to be, appropriately encouraged and rewarded for using those tools and having an incentive to do so. So, to wrap up, I mean, I think, we're open to things like alternative billing models, paying for the use of certain technology on our transactions, paying flat fees for portions of a transaction, staffing matters differently than we might have historically. I think, us as clients need to be sensitive to the impact this is having on law firms and be aware of that. And I think most clients are really committed to partnering with their external counsel to find a path forward that works for everybody.
Yeah, I have one question for Steve along those lines. So you were saying you're under pressure by your bosses to deliver work efficiently, but they're not necessarily, my impression has been that if you could spend more money but show that you were getting better value, that might be something that you'd be able to sell internally to your sort of stakeholders. Is that true? Like, is the legal budget kind of fixed? Or if you can say, hey, this law firm has proposed this extra way to do this extra thing that's going to cost me some extra money, but they're doing it really efficiently because of using AI or other technology or different people or anything like that. Is that something that you might be able to sell internally? Like, it's not like a fixed budget kind of situation.
No, I agree with that entirely. No, in our organization, I would say in most similar organizations that are doing, international M&A, there aren't fixed budgets. We're looking to get value for money and be as efficient as possible. So if AI can help firms cross borders work more effectively together, deal with language barriers, even something as simple, as you said earlier, if we're looking at more contracts, if that's going to help the post-merger integration process be more smooth and efficient and generate savings, our internal teams would say that's money well spent on sort of the due diligence or legal advisory process. So it's really about the benefits and the efficiencies more than the cost from my perspective.
So I would have wanted to have a whole conversation about the human capital element here as well. I think we won't have time for that, but there's, especially coming from big law and law firms, looking at the tools to enhance productivity, reduce burnout, allow more diverse inclusion of different people, but also trying to make sure that we're not creating a threat to job security and the learning process, etc. But I think we won't have that. Will be for our next podcast. All of that aspect that could be interesting, as well as a lot of discussions around. Right. What are the risks around the use of AI, whether it's privacy, data security, AI policies, regulatory matters, hallucinations, ethics, and the list goes on. But we have to end. So we'll have to do this. We'll have to continue this a different time and a plug for the corporate M&A committee of the IBA and many of our conferences and events. But just maybe a question to both of you as we wrap up here. We're in an age of the unknown, right? There's just so much out there. It's moving faster than we would have ever known. What is under-discussed at this point in terms of AI and M&A? Or what issues should we be watching for next? Do you have any final thoughts around that?
I think I'll defer to Noah, Adina. I have some thoughts, but for the sake of time, I think I and our listeners would be most interested in hearing what he has to say.
To me, the really interesting thing is the point that I talked about before, which is what are the things that aren't happening now that you would make the process better for different participants if they could happen? And like if they could happen because the price is, say, you know, 10 or 20% the cost of what it would be right now. Like if no one's doing something right now, what are the things that you'd like to know? Even just thinking about what's market, like maybe before you did what's market, just on like a broad study, like all public deals, but maybe Steve is really concerned with like financial services transactions in, you know, the United States, right? Or something like that under $2 billion, right? Like that might be something. And I think now that the cost of kind of getting information on what's market on that is lower, I think that makes it possible. I think there's things around like sell side diligence that are like possible now. And I think we'll see lots more of that stuff. And then going further along, like as you potentially, like one of the things that I think M&A participants hate most are sort of broken deal costs. And I think that to the extent you can kind of like lower the front loaded costs, like before you, obviously a deal can break at any point, but it's much more likely to break earlier on in the process, like as people are less serious. And to the extent you can kind of drive down broken deal costs, I think you have the potential actually of like almost increasing asset prices in the sense that you'd have, I think, a lot more people willing to kind of bid on assets and get involved in auctions and processes if the broken deal costs were lower. So I'm kind of excited about the idea of AI technology and stuff that can lower costs at the stage when you're not sure if a deal is going to go through, so that you can potentially get more people willing to participate, which should drive asset prices up, which should drive you more M&A.
Interesting. Yeah. And maybe
does that make sense?
Resource allocation of who's working on what component and how much, being able to track that.
Yeah, but also maybe just like doing things to a 70% level or an 80% level early on in the process and then kind of upgrading it to a high level as you get kind of closer to certainty. Like that to me, I think kind of is interesting. I think like a lot of participants, like M&A lawyers probably dislike broken deals a lot. And I think investment bankers dislike them even more. Sponsors dislike them even more. Like companies dislike them even more. So, you know, a lot of people who hate that stuff. And I think to the extent you can kind of accommodate that a little bit better than just offering like a big discount on fees or something, I think that's something that can be popular.
Steve, the last thought on this or?
No, I think it was a fascinating conversation today. Noah just left me with something to think about how we might want to stage diligence on a future transaction, being no stranger to broken deals as we all are, unfortunately. So, I enjoyed the conversation today and also learned something new.
Yeah, great. This was fascinating. Thank you both. Thank you, Noah, for sharing your expertise. And Steve, always great to partner with you on this. So for our listeners, thank you for joining the conversation. Stay tuned for our future IBA Corporate M&A Committee sessions and our particular focus on AI and on legal tech. I'm Adina Shapiro, and thank you for listening.